frigid one, but we are back with Par Radio, giving you the best sports talk around. We have Jacob with us. How are you doing, Jacob?
Hey, man. I'm doing well.
James?
I'm doing great, man.
And we are joined by UCCS men's basketball wing Jeff Kelly this morning. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here today.
Of course.
Skylar, tell us about UCCS basketball.
Okay, sounds good. Well, this weekend we have UCCS basketball taking on Metro State University at 7:30 p.m. The Mountain Lions are currently in the seventh seed in the RMAC conference and are looking to improve their seeding as we go towards the playoffs. Additionally, our women's lacrosse team won over Ava Maria College yesterday 21-8, and UCCS Radio's own Maddie Ellis scored 3 goals. Way to go, ladies.
Shout out, Maddie Ellis.
All right, Jeff, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, where you're from, what got you into basketball, things like that?
Yeah, so I've been playing basketball for a little over 15 years now. Ever since I was a kid, I just loved it. I'm from Aurora, Colorado, went to Regis Jesuit High School. What got me into basketball, you know, like I said, I was kind of just around the game my whole life. My dad was a big basketball player, so he was always in, you know, competitive, like, adult leagues and stuff like that. So I kind of just was always around the game. The more I was around it, the more I developed a love for it. And, you know, once I started playing when I was 4 or 5 years old, it just, you know, I couldn't get enough of it. Whether I was out there playing or watching the NBA, you know, my favorite player when I was young was Allen Iverson. And, you know, he was one of the people who influenced me with my hair. I had cornrows for about 15 years, just cut them last year. But he was a huge influence to me. I just loved how he played and everything. I just love the game, everything about it, you know, the competitiveness and everything it taught you, you know, that you could use outside of basketball too. So that was the biggest thing for me.
Was this Denver Allen Iverson, Detroit Allen Iverson, or the great Philly one?
Oh, it was Philly.
Okay.
It was Philly.
Had to check. Can't have any Detroit Allen Iverson fans in here.
No, don't have to do all that.
All right, you guys want to get into it now? Ready?
For sure. Right. I think we're going to talk some NFL draft. James, how are you feeling about the 2018 NFL draft class?
Well, the draft class overall, I'll get to in a second. But I just want to say one thing about NFL reporters who do draft, like mock drafts. They annoy me so much because I feel like at this point in time, they just kind of throw out the most random things ever. Like, yesterday, I've seen, a couple of drafts now that they have the Steelers drafting Darius Geis. Okay, yeah, which is insane considering all the talk that, the Steelers want to, sign Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell wants to stay with the Steelers. Just, I don't understand. I feel like it's a lot of, and, everyone's all over the place on who wants to do what. And I guess it's early, but that's just my opinion.
I think my favorite part about NFL reporters when they talk about the draft is they use keywords to describe players, and I feel like they're just compensating for weaknesses of players.
Mm-hmm.
He's scrappy and competitive. No, he's small and physical. that doesn't work. When people describe Baker Mayfield, they use that a lot, and I love Baker Mayfield, but they use words that try and make up for the fact that he's undersized and not as pro ready as other quarterbacks.
Well, and in the NFL, it's so hard to overcome physicality, right?
Yeah.
You see it in other sports with quickness and these other attributes, but I try to think of really diminutive sized NFL quarterbacks, and I can think of Drew Brees was not a huge guy, mm-hmm. but his IQ was obviously off the charts.
Russell Wilson. Probably the same boat.
And with both of those guys, there's still always injury concern with them, right? You're trying to not let them get hits.
Isn't Russell Wilson having surgery right now?
I think he is.
Well, I guess speaking of physicality, I mean, Lamar Jackson, he is just like a twigs with a head. So I really wonder how he will. I'm sorry. I guess I can't talk. I don't know. It's just in the NFL, I just really wonder how overall he will be able to do when – he's just, I don't want to say he's weak because I don't think he is, but in general, he doesn't necessarily have the typical quarterback size and strength. Overall, obviously, he's a great running quarterback, and I think that he can have some kind of opportunity in the league, but I think he's really going to have to overcome just size and like in terms of mass.
On the topic of quarterbacks in this draft, I actually love Lamar Jackson. I think he's a dynamic playmaker. He kind of reminds me of Robert Griffin III, honestly. Is maybe the earlier,
sure,
yeah, maybe the earlier versions. But I like him better than any other quarterback in this draft. I see Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen. I don't like any of those guys, honestly.
You like Lamar Jackson over any of those three quarterbacks?
I do, and like even the topic of Josh Allen, I've never seen such a hyped quarterback. He does not throw the ball very well. If you look at his stats, he was not a very high completion percentage. He had these physical attributes. He threw the ball faster than any other quarterback ever has at the draft combine. But this guy is not a good football player when you look at the stats.
I think what I love Josh Allen, and like what excites me is not how he played at Wyoming. That's not what excites me about Josh Allen. What excites me about Josh Allen is that he has all the tools. He has all the tools to succeed in the NFL. He just needs some other like pieces around him and some coaching. And obviously he's not going to start immediately if you draft Josh Allen right now. And he's probably not going to be the first quarterback taken. I'll admit that. But he is my favorite quarterback in the draft. And he needs to be groomed, but he's just a raw talent. That excites me.
You know, people said the same thing about Paxton Lynch, and now look where we are.
You said that about Paxton Lynch.
I think there was a lot. People said he had the tools. He had the throwing motion. I'm not sure.
I don't know about the Paxton Lynch comparison, but
I see Josh Allen and I hear Paxton Lynch. That's all I'm saying right now.
I feel like they're two totally different players.
We'll have to come back to this in a year.
I think Sam Darnold's probably going to be the first quarterback taken.
Yes,
is probably what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when I listened to Colin Cowherd yesterday, and he was talking about the draft, and he was saying it was one of those keyword things. He was like, Sam Darnold is a winner. Well, everybody's a winner.
Yeah.
You went to USC. Like, you win as a quarterback at USC. But, I mean, I don't love Sam Darnold, but I think he is the most pro-ready quarterback compared to Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield.
Have you guys seen the Tom Brady comparisons around Darnold, though?
Sam Darnold?
Yeah.
How can you even compare anybody to Tom Brady right now?
Unreasonable. And some of these comparisons are levied from Darnold himself. He likes to throw out these comparisons, but I don't like the quarterbacks in this draft. I'm sorry, but even Josh Rosen,
I'm not high on Josh Rosen.
He's not great arm strength, right?
I think he's probably overall the best passer.
Yeah.
I
think he's a game manager.
I'm not taking him first or second overall. He's probably going to go first or second overall, but
yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see who the Giants take, though, because I mean, obviously, we know that the Browns are most likely going to take a quarterback with either the first or the fourth pick, unless they sign someone like Kirk Cousins.
I think that's a realistic possibility. I think the Browns sign a quarterback and they take Saquon Barkley first overall.
I think that's possible.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think everyone's like projecting that the Giants take Josh Rosen, which, I mean, obviously they're going to need a quarterback soon, but I don't know if this is the time that they want to be focusing on quarterback, because I feel like Eli Manning has some more time and maybe invest in something more important to you, maybe like a running back. Pick Saquon Barkley, helps yourself out. I mean, they don't have a great offensive line there in New York, but I feel like if you give someone like Saquon Barkley in New York with Eli Manning there, it can really kind of help kind of rejuvenate his career at least for a year or two more. And then you can focus on, you can draft a quarterback in the second round, third round, fourth round, something like that. But I don't think the Giants should go quarterback first round.
What a nerve-wracking prospect drafting a running back that high, though.
Oh,
is that fair?
Oh, absolutely.
I think of Trent Richardson.
Any Alabama running back.
Yeah, Alabama running back. Mark Ingram a few years back. That's going
Eddie
back
Lacy.
A while. Even No'Shawn Moreno. He was a high pick, and it's just hard to take a running back that high, man.
You've got to think Barkley is, like, by and large, the best player in this draft.
I agree with that.
He's probably the best player in this draft.
And he didn't have a ton of carries. Yeah, no, but that, you know, we didn't see a lot of wear and tear on him during his college tenure.
And I mean, God, it's going to be so disappointing to see him go somewhere like Cleveland and have it be so terrible. But so
the wasted carries at that point almost, right? What are
we have a once-in-a-generation talent coming into the draft this year, and the freaking Browns are going to ruin it.
What are they fighting for?
Come on. Let him go to someone cool, like the Broncos.
Yeah, exactly.
But who do the Broncos take at 5? Do the Broncos go quarterback? Do they go offensive line? Because you could argue Quentin Nelson on Notre Dame is also could be argued as the best player in the draft at guard. But, I mean, I have lots of reports say Baker Mayfield to Denver, which, as a Bronco fan, would be fun.
What a John Elway move, too.
Oh, man. Right. That'd be classic, J.E.
Yeah.
Best storyline.
Yeah. I mean, I think if Denver does want a quarterback, they have to go first round because people, in recent years, everyone just wants a quarterback. And it's like that's why we have the quarterback carousel. We'll be talking about more again today because it just keeps on getting crazier. Just quarterback is so important in this league now, especially since it's a very heavy passing league. And so if they want someone that they can actually start, I think they're going to have to go quarterback first round, maybe Baker Mayfield, maybe someone else. I feel like there's not going to be – they're going to have a good choice of quarterbacks at 5. So I don't want to say they can pick anyone they want, but they're going to have some good choices there for sure.
If you're taking quarterback in this draft, you got to go first round no matter what.
Yeah.
It's a deep running back draft class, so you can wait till the second round. But you got to go quarterback in the first round. I don't know. J.E. might make that move. We can trade up and take another terrible quarterback or something again.
I could see it. Let's just hope it's not Josh Allen.
Okay. Okay. I've heard he's pretty high on Josh Allen.
I believe it. I don't have a ton of faith in Elway as our GM too.
You
if
are
we're
not
being on,
an Elway fan.
I never have been, but
I'm with you when you talk about it. I'm with you on the fact that like all he's really seemed to do is get Peyton Manning to come to Denver, and that's really the only thing that's helped us win a Super Bowl overall. And really, that wasn't.
I think he capitalizes on hype as a GM, and I think we all see those GMs. Mitch Kupchak did that for a long time on your Lakers, James. And then when the going gets tough, you don't see a very capable GM who can make roster moves. Kobe Altman, what he just did with the Cavaliers, that's the GM I want over Mitch Kupchak. And I feel like John Elway's the Mitch Kupchak of the NFL.
I see that.
Yeah.
I
see that.
Like kind of a bigger market. Not, obviously, Denver's not as big as LA, but in football, Denver's a fairly good size market.
And a rabid fan base here in Denver.
Good fan base. But definitely he capitalized on the opportunity to sign Peyton Manning, but he already had a defense to back him up. So it worked out.
Well, do we want to move to a little NBA action before we break?
Sure. And I was ready. The Kobe Altman thing is a good – because I read a report, actually. This will be good for you guys. That on the trade deadline day, the Cavs wanted to sign DeAndre Jordan, and they tried to sign DeAndre
trade
Jordan.
Trade for
sign, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
And it just like it didn't happen, obviously. And can you imagine a Cavs team with DeAndre Jordan in it? He's not a prolific offensive player by any means, but he's athletic, he can defend. He's top 5 defensive centers in the NBA, you've got to say. Probably top 3.
Yeah.
And what a team that would have been.
Having him, DeAndre Jordan, and LeBron, there's no but like every shot you get is contested, you know?
Yeah.
And I couldn't even imagine like trying to shoot with, you know, just the thought of having those two just like lurking around, you know? And you may say J.R. Smith's guarding you. Okay. You beat J.R. Smith. Okay. I'm going to go get a lift. I'm going to go dunk it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Nah.
Right there. DeAndre Jordan, LeBron James. So having him, if he would have joined the Cavs, that would have been ridiculous.
Yeah, I saw that too. I don't remember all the details. Wasn't it just like they were trying to trade. The Clippers wanted another point guard or shooting guard, I think it was. And so they wanted to do a three-team trade, basically, to get everything they wanted. And, like, they've been, Kobe Altman, who's the GM of the Clippers, you know?
Doc Rivers. He's Jerry West, kind of, now. That's a whole disaster to get into another time. Yeah.
they were trying to... They've been talking about it for a while, and they had tried to get a three-team trade going, but they just couldn't find anything that worked for everybody. So that's why that ended up falling through. But yeah, that would have been crazy to see happen. I mean, I wonder then what overall would have like changed with what they have now, because I feel like the moves they made overall net was probably somewhat equal to what you would have gotten if you had just traded for DeAndre Jordan, because obviously they wouldn't have been able to make the same trades that they would have made.
Well, I heard that the Larry Nance and Jordan Clarkson trade was done. Like, it was going to happen regardless if they traded for DeAndre Jordan. So they would have had Clarkson and Nance and Jordan, which would have been interesting.
Here's something to think about. DeAndre Jordan cannot space the floor. He's surely your rim-running five, right? And I look at Tristan Thompson, and I see pretty much an undersized DeAndre Jordan, if we're being honest here. Yes. So how does DeAndre Jordan look in a Cavaliers offense? Because with all due respect to LeBron, Tristan Thompson has looked awful this season. And he has been hampered by injuries, but does DeAndre Jordan just become a glorified garbage man in this very dysfunctional Cavaliers offense? That's what I worry about.
Can you imagine a high pick and roll of LeBron and DeAndre Jordan? Because, I mean, he could throw up a lob to DeAndre and he could throw it right back to LeBron. And just two crazy athletic, large human beings tearing up a basketball floor.
I agree, but I feel like in some ways the Cavaliers are playing a ton of Larry Nance at the five right now, right? And Larry Nance, he's slender. He can't guard bigger players, but, man, this guy can stay in front of perimeter guards, right? Mm-hmm. So right now the Cavaliers are running a defense where they switch everything. They don't have to worry about pick and roll coverages because they just switch everything. It hasn't gotten exposed yet. I feel like maybe not getting DeAndre was almost kind of a blessing in disguise for this Cavaliers team because it made them change their style of play. And now we're seeing a style of play that can match with a Golden State, right? Mm-hmm. You now have Larry Nance guarding a Draymond Green when they go small, as opposed to a DeAndre Jordan who I would not feel comfortable trying to guard Draymond Green out on the perimeter, right? And, yeah, I do think you missed something defensively, like you said, Jeff, because when J.R. Smith gets beat, which has been happening pretty frequently this season, you don't have that rim protector behind you. But to some extent, you just hope Tristan Thompson returns to form, right? And he can be that rim protector in some aspects. And then you still have a Larry Nance that's going to become hopefully an elite switching big man.
He doesn't even need to be elite.
That's true. He just needs to be above average.
On your team, you can be subpar and work.
The other thing is LeBron's been playing a lot of the four spot now instead of the three, and I think you see it in his stats. It's just a huge jump because now teams are trying to cross match him with the Blake Griffins of the world instead of the Justice Winslow's, and that doesn't sound very good, but LeBron has a heyday against big men. Yeah. He always has.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're on any other NBA team, if you're coaching any other NBA team, I mean, who do you pick to guard LeBron James? There's maybe five people in the entire NBA who I'd be comfortable with guarding LeBron James, if that.
Yeah.
Giannis?
Giannis. That was my first thought was Giannis.
Speaking of the Greek freak, the Nuggets last night.
Oh, man. We have a different freak.
We do. Yes. Nikola Jokic, 30 points, 15 rebounds, 17 assists. The fastest triple-double in NBA history.
Triple-double in the first half.
Wow. We have an international treasure.
And, I mean, we're going to make the playoffs with him. It's going to be awesome.
Have you guys ever seen a player like this, though? He plays at his own speed. He doesn't jump more than 4 inches off the ground.
By no means is he blowing us away with his athleticism.
No.
Which is interesting because he's beating us with his mind.
Yeah.
And how do you guard that? You don't guard that.
I can't get past 17 assists for a five-man, too. Like, I feel like we have a lot of five-men, especially in the NBA. We see it even at UCCS, too, that are trying to make big plays, trying to pass the ball, but to actually get 17 assists.
Yeah. It's got to be good credit to guards and wings on the Nuggets as well, making cuts and getting open for him, obviously getting shots, but I feel like the Nuggets are playing very well as a team right now. And the fact that a lot of the credits can be given to Jokic, but I mean, Will Barton off the bench and
Jamal Murray's made huge strides in the past 3 weeks.
It's just,
oh my goodness.
What a team. Who would have saw it coming? Man. And speaking of that, I mean, speaking of like good young players, oh my God, Donovan Mitchell.
The Utah Jazz are on an 11-game winning streak right now.
Still none of the playoffs, but continue.
Ricky Rubio. Hey, 538's playoff projections, they now have an 89% chance to make the playoffs last time I checked. The Nuggets are currently at 66, even though they hold I don't know how those projections are working, but man, the Utah Jazz. Ricky Rubio, maybe this is some Manchurian candidate type. I don't know what's happening with him, but he has been averaging 18 points, 7 rebounds, and 6 assists over this 11-game winning streak. He's shooting 50% from the field, 44% from 3, and 89% from the free throw line. Who is this Ricky Rubio?
You think Ricky Rubio ever shot 50% from the field before his entire life?
You know, I remember those grainy YouTube videos back in the mid-2000s of him tearing up older competition. He was an elite European player, but like... In the NBA, he hadn't found that scoring punch, and I don't know if this is going to be sustainable or not, but man.
I mean, it's nice to see Ricky Rubio finally playing well.
It is.
Yeah.
He's always an enjoyable player to watch, you know what I mean? He's so much flash. And
yeah. He's got that European swag to him.
He has the flair, like a soccer player, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like he learned something overseas that you just can't. You just can't teach here in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you have...
Like the same with Manu Ginobili. Like, there's just something there that us American players don't have.
And that's interesting you say that, because I was watching the Nuggets game last night, and I see Giannis absolutely... I don't even have words. He's so much more athletic and long and strong than all of his opponents. And then you have Jokic, who's almost the inverse of Giannis in every way. But both these guys are from Europe, and they're fundamentally sound. They're terrific passers. The IQ they possess. Is there something different happening at the developmental level in Europe that we're not getting here?
I mean, you see just the consistency of play from European players.
Mm-hmm.
Their footwork has to be better, just because, generally speaking, in Europe, sports players have better footwork. That's got to be due to soccer, right? They teach a mentality over there of consistency and good footwork and just like proper technique that allows for you to use your talents otherwise. And that breeds success in American sports.
Yeah, I think it also has to do with the fact that they kind of start in professional leagues at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
So they're playing with older talent, more experienced talent. From a younger age, and I don't want to say that obviously the competition level is much lower, but just the fact that you're playing with someone who's very experienced and is probably just better overall on defense and like just a better overall player than someone that is just in high school, and you know, it's like you're like a senior player playing against some freshman who just happened to be able to start. You're probably still like you're not going to learn as much and become a better player by playing against someone like that than playing with some like 30-year-old dude who's really good at basketball.
That's a good point, James, and I think you see some of these young European kids, they come in and are not physically ready yet, but they're mentally ready. I see that with Kristaps Porzingis. He came in like a toothpick, but man, he could still be effective because he would not mentally give up to these guys. And I don't think we hit this last week, but unfortunately he's out for the year with the ACL injury. Man,
that's just funny.
Tough luck. I know Jeff Kelly here is actually suffering from the same injury. Do you want any insight on how that recovery process goes?
Oh, it sucks. It is. It's not fun. But yeah, you know, it's like when it happens, you know, it's going to be a long process to get back. So it's kind of just taking it day by day, you know, trying to stay positive. Like that first week after surgery was probably the worst week of my life. It was awful.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, then you kind of just sit back and you have support around you and you see all the people around you like, okay, like we're going to do this. I don't really have a choice now. So you can sit in bed and just kind of feel bad for yourself, or you can just say, okay, well, let's make it happen, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's tough.
When do you expect to be back?
So 6 months will be in August. So if everything goes perfectly, then it'll be then. But then maybe a little bit later,
yeah,
depending on how everything goes. But we'll see. We'll see.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's enough for now, guys. We'll just go to a quick break here, and we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to UCCS Physical Activity Radio. We're going to talk some more about some NBA news. First off, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're not doing that great. So after the Andre Roberson injury, they are 33-26 at the break in fifth place in the West. And they've currently lost 6 of the last 9 games. What do you guys think about this?
My issue is with Russell Westbrook. I bet that comes as a surprise, huh? And I was listening to Colin Cowherd. Shout out to Colin. He's given me a lot of good opinions.
Also a close friend of the show.
Yeah. Very close. We're very close. I'm very close to... but he was saying, and I thought this was a really, really good point, that when you see the fact that Altman made all those trades with the Cavs,
mm-hmm.
and LeBron is actually playing better. And he was talking about how there's a reason that Russell Westbrook isn't as big of a star as LeBron James. And because, one, he's obviously not as much of a team player. He gets tunnel vision when it comes down to it.
He's actually leading the league in assists, though.
Yeah, he's a stat monster. But look at the way his team is performing.
Almost a stat chaser.
Yeah, it's definitely. That. See, that's what he was saying. He's like he puts up numbers every night, but his team is not winning. And he was saying Westbrook does not communicate as effectively. He's just not as good of a teammate. Because you could argue that LeBron James traded away, the Cavs traded away, pretty good players, and they got back B-, C-plus players back. Like, nobody's out here saying Larry Nance is great, except for James. quote, Larry Nance is a good scorer. Unquote.
Mistakenly.
But Russell Westbrook in the offseason had Carmelo Anthony, future Hall of Famer, come in, and Paul George, top 10, 15 players in the league. And they're doing worse. They're one game worse off than they were at this point last year. And that has to be a testament to the way Russell Westbrook is running that team. Because LeBron James is succeeding with arguably worse players. Not arguably. With worse players.
LeBron, you hear it all the time. You're a great player if you make the people around you better, you know? And LeBron's going to do that with whoever he has. You know, if you're playing with LeBron, you'll make a cut with him, and he's going to get you the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're playing with somebody else, you make that same cut, you're not getting the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Russell, I feel like he has times where he makes everyone better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not consistent, you know? And I feel like that's how Carmelo and Paul George are as well. You know, there will be times where, okay, they're scoring the ball really well. All right, so obviously the defense is going to focus a little more on them. And then they can make the pass. And then that's how, you know, you see those, you know, fancy passes, flashy passes that they make. But they can't do it on a consistent basis. That's not the mindset that they have. And, you know, that's something LeBron does so well. You know, like you said, the people around him aren't great at all by any means. But when they're playing with LeBron, it's hard not to be a good player,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Can I hit you guys with a metaphor for how I feel about this?
Please.
All right. LeBron James is Elmo.
What?
Mm-hmm. He's just making everyone around him happy. Mm-hmm. He's doing his job. He knows his role. He's the face of the franchise, and he accepts it. And people like him, right? He's an amiable personality to be around for the most part, unless you're Isaiah Thomas. But
and he likes being tickled.
Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I know you want to laugh at that.
Russell Westbrook is the cookie monster, and everything on the basketball court is his cookies.
Yeah.
He stat chases. He tries to do everything, and I think that's the fault. And LeBron walks down this path sometimes. I think he was almost doing it before all these Cleveland trades happened. But it's part of Russell Westbrook's identity. It's who he is. He tries to do everything on the basketball court for everybody. And it turns Paul George into a spot-up three-point shooter in the corner. Although you have probably a top three isolation player in the league in George. It turns Carmelo Anthony, another terrific isolation player, into a...
One of the all-time greatest,
easily. And Melo's not what he used to be, but I would still feel comfortable going to him in a post matchup against a small forward or power forward 95% of the time in this league. And Russell Westbrook turned him into a screen man. You know what I mean? He's chasing after his cookies, and he's watching everyone else turn into a role player. He turns his stars into role players on his team. But speaking of role players on the Thunder, Andre Roberson has gone down with a patella injury. I know we talked about this when it first happened. Mm-hmm. We kind of shrugged it off. OKC's deep. They have good wings. They have good shooters. They'll recover.
Yeah.
Man, things are starting to unravel in Oklahoma City right now.
Oh, and things are bad.
There are some fascinating stats. Paul George is actually scoring 5 more points a game and shooting 7% better from 3 in this span of games that Roberson hasn't been there. At the same time, Oklahoma City has lost the majority of those games, and their offensive rating and defensive net rating is actually worse with Roberson hurt than it has been with him on the floor. And this is just a little bit confounding, because Roberson is widely considered to be the worst offensive player in the league by most metrics. He can't shoot. Teams leave him open in the corner, and they gobble up his misses off wide-open threes. But, I don't quite know how to quantify it. How is this god-awful offensive player, how is the offense functioning worse without him?
Well, I mean, there's one less cook in the kitchen when you put him on the floor, mm-hmm. offensively.
Is he really a cook, though, at all? That's question.
Well, yeah. If he's not a cook, then there's one less cook. but then there's got to be a way that defensively he helps offensively. Steals, blocks, transition.
Great turnovers.
But then good defense makes good offense. But then obviously, like, Paul George is shooting the three more. We probably don't want Paul George doing that. We want Paul George to slash. And that's what Russell Westbrook is doing. And the fact that Roberson is out is just one less option for Paul George. He just needs to shoot.
Definitely. And I do feel like Roberson actually clogged up the floor for Paul George, right? Because when you don't have to worry about a shooter, and Jeff knows this, the team just helps. They help the hell out of the ball. It doesn't matter where you are. And I guess that just makes it more confusing why the offense doesn't function better with an Alex Abrines. Lights out shooter, and he's actually been playing terrific, but they cannot translate easier offense into wins, which I think is fascinating. And it's kind of a microcosm of the Russell Westbrook experience, right?
Yeah.
When it's easy, it doesn't work. And when it's hard, you see something incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's kind of an enigma.
So I kind of want to go back to what you guys were saying before about, like, the comparison between LeBron James and Russell Westbrook. And, okay, stop laughing, Skylar. I feel like I'm going to ask a good question, so relax, okay?
I was just thinking about that metaphor. That's not my best metaphor.
It's okay. He compared LeBron James to Elmo earlier, so principle is there, so I'll give you
that. Yeah, so you guys were saying that LeBron James makes the players around him better.
As all great players do.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time.
But why does it seem like fairly often LeBron James is looking for things to change around his team, where he wants to get rid of people or bring different people in? Why does it seem like you have to constantly build a team around him, even after building a team around him that he said he wanted? Like when they brought in Kyle Korver, and then he didn't play that well. LeBron didn't want him really anymore, and then they had to change the team up again. So, like, why does it seem like LeBron James constantly needs to be built around if he makes other players better, truly?
I think it's because you see LeBron in this kind of GM role in the Cavs sometimes. Actually, not as much anymore. I think Kobe Altman stands on his own 2 feet a lot better than David Griffin ever did. And I love David Griffin, but that's it. But I think you see a very nearsighted player making personnel decisions, and then he changes his mind, right? Mm-hmm. It's just short-sighted decision-making at its finest.
Yeah, I think Altman's bringing some perspective now which is helping LeBron James. So
Allman's not afraid of LeBron too. He's not afraid to make him mad. That's important, you know. If you want to get the star player, you have to be willing to lose a star player.
Yeah, eye for an eye.
Yeah, he's a pretty good leader. Someone else who's a really great leader is Steve Kerr, in my opinion. Because I don't know if you saw a few days ago, he let the players coach the team a little bit, which I personally just loved because, I mean, obviously it was criticized just mainly because they're the Warriors. But I think overall that was like a really good move for Steve Kerr. One, I mean, they were playing the Suns, so there wasn't too much worry there. Second, like in terms of building better team chemistry off their already incredible team chemistry, that's just going to make them stronger as a team, being able to lead by themselves. Like, obviously, you would think that a hands-off approach by a coach is probably not the best decision, but with a team like the Warriors, I think it's just a great decision overall. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, he's a player's coach, you know? And nobody ever really has anything bad to say about Steve Kerr, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, they'll say little things here or there, but for the most part, he's a great guy. He's a great coach. And going at that, I mean, you know, everyone knows, like, the players on the Warriors aren't dumb. They have a good basketball IQ. I mean,
I'd say
you could say JaVale. I mean, you could go there, but...
the great players, we have
a knack for criticizing people, like, personally.
Yeah. That JaVale one's hard for me because he's off the court, he is one of the most intelligent people,
off the court.
Well, I understand what you're saying, though. Steve Kerr, he's a real dude.
Yeah.
He's a good bro.
He's a real dude. Loved that move, actually. I'm not a huge fan of Steve Kerr as much as you guys. I have nothing wrong with him. I guess I just don't think about Steve Kerr as much. But what stands out to me is that he had the presence of mind and, like, he put his own ego aside to see that, like, something wasn't going right. So he needed to, something had to change.
Mm-hmm.
So he, like, took a step back and he thought about it. He's like, I'm just going to let them coach and see how it works. And, like, I feel like they've, like, bred such an incredible, like, culture of success in Oakland that he was, like, that is able to happen in
and
their team.
It kept the players engaged, right? Yeah, I feel like, especially,
I'm excited to play.
Especially for a team that's as talented as the Warriors, I think they're kind of in a checkout mode. We're close to All-Star break. These dudes get to go home to their, I guess most of them are going to New Orleans if you're the Warriors.
Yeah.
But, these dudes get to go home to their families. They get to relax a little bit, go out. How do you keep a team engaged that's that talented and that is taking these wins for granted to some extent? And I think that was the perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate the Suns had to be the on the butt end of that experiment. But
I really like the Suns, too.
Dragon Bender. He's coming into his own.
Alfred Payton is a good trade for them.
Good move. Compliments so Devin Booker terrifically.
I gotta be excited for Phoenix, man. They look good.
Yeah, Josh Jackson. He out of all the rookies in the league, he is the worst in terms of he allows the most defensive points against him, and he adds the least amount of points offensively.
Like,
so
worst plus minus.
Yeah, advanced stats just hate the kid. But these 19-year-olds, you can't bring them in and expect them to perform at a high level so early. Yeah. Like, a lot, it's weird thinking about, but a lot of these kids are the same age as us.
Yeah. That's sad.
Yeah, they're physically gifted and have all the tools in the shed, but it's hard.
Yeah. It's just a whole another speed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can be the most talented person, the most athletic person, but, you know, it's, you know, in college, you're playing against kids your same age, you know? And when you go to the NBA, you're playing against grown men. I mean, you could say kids in college are grown men, too, because some of those kids are ridiculous.
Marvin Bagley isn't a grown man.
He was a grown man since sophomore year of high school. Oh, my goodness. But, just going to the league and having to play against that competition every night, you know, and it's just something you got to get used to, and it takes a while.
Yeah, how do you go from guarding Grayson Allen to LeBron James?
That's,
yeah,
that's
like that. I mean, obviously, you're probably not guarding. It's not a one-for-one yeah, comparison, but...
I understand what you're saying, though. So you're in your sophomore year here, right?
Yep.
Playing basketball. Has it slowed down for you yet at this level?
You know, it's starting to get there. It definitely takes a time because, you know, like I said, it's just a whole other level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in high school, you're playing against, you know, in high school, I was the biggest kid on my team. And now you come here and we have two kids who are 6'11", 7 feet. and that's how every team is, you know. So it's, I remember the summer before my freshman year, just playing summer league with the team and trying to get to know everyone, is my shot was just getting blocked all the time, you know. So it's just learning little things, how you have to, you know, shoot the ball a little bit differently, how you have to move a little bit differently, how you have to space the floor to, you know, stay up with the competition you're playing against. Because obviously a lot of college kids are more skilled than high school kids and everything, but for me it wasn't really as much as a talent thing. It was just learning the new speed and mm-hmm. the athleticism that you're playing against all the time. So that was the biggest thing to get into with me.
And going through the AAU circuit in Denver, right? Yeah. You were playing in that. Were you going against the Deron Davises of the world and some of these kids that are playing in big programs now?
Yeah, so I played against Deron for, you know, my 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I've known him for a while. And then I played against Marvin Bagley a couple times. So it's when you play against them, you definitely want to play well. You're like, okay, they're, you know, they're top recruits. They're really good. So I'm going to go out there and show them they're not that much better than me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going out there with that kind of competitiveness is something you got to do every game in college, you know? Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're playing against kids like that who, you know, a lot of the kids, especially in the RMAC, a lot of kids could have went D1, but it just didn't work out for some reason. So you have to kind of take that same mentality to every game. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, especially when you're playing against, you know, one of those big names. You're like, okay, let me go show them they're not that great. You know, just try to prove somebody wrong.
Bruce Bowen them, lock them down, exactly. 0 points. Yeah.
Skylar, have you played against Deron?
I did play against Deron, but we don't talk about that. I was not near the defensive player Jeff was, so we probably had radically different experiences.
Oh, I mean,
you lock him down.
All right.
I won't list stats for you.
Let's transition to what we hope will be a new weekly segment on this show.
Oh,
we're all very excited about this. It's our LeVar Ball Watch. And so we're just going to talk about the life of LeVar and his family overall, the Ball family. So first, obvious, I don't know if you guys heard, but yesterday Lonzo dropped an album, Born to Ball. With two instead of T.O.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, really lyrically gifted.
Original.
But I listened to a little bit of it.
So did I.
And you did? What did you think of it? He made a really gross face. We're listening.
I don't even have words for it, really. It was privileged rap. No one wants to hear that.
I think it sounds good. If you don't listen to what he's saying, if you just kind of listen to it, and
if you hear the sound,
it's background noise. Yeah, I mean, I can't. I'm not surprised that he decided to make an album because, I mean, that's just kind of what a lot of people do.
That's,
you know,
just a Ball family.
Yeah, that's
a baller
is.
Move. If you,
yeah,
pardon the pun.
As a millennial basketball player in the NBA, I feel like they're all thinking about it.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
Like, aside from Damian Lillard, Lonzo's the only one to like. Do
Damian,
something about
like,
it. Damian Lillard's
good.
Yeah. He's a Dame Dalla, isn't that what he calls himself?
Sounds,
yeah.
Right, yeah. He's really good, actually.
He
I've
is.
Heard that.
Alonzo should take some notes.
Yeah.
And on and off the court.
Yeah, yeah.
sorry, Alonzo. we just can't avoid making fun of people.
No, I would say we're more amiable to the Ball family than most. But
I love the Ball family.
Yeah,
honestly.
We've spoken very highly of them on this show. But
Skylar and I, even off air, we sit at lunch and talk about how much we like LeVar Ball and the Ball family. Actually. Yeah. They just can't stay out on the news, and it's amazing.
Yeah, like
it's fascinating how they keep making news.
Sorry.
What?
Sorry. I was just saying he's hosting the Lithuania Music Awards, which is insane because he's been there for what, like a month now?
Couple months?
They already, a couple months. Really?
The country embraced him and they loved him.
Yeah.
What did bug me? He came on an interview and this was like, it was maybe even yesterday. He goes, man, Lithuania ain't nothing. And like, for a country that was super kind to him and his family, put his sons on the map, helped grow his brand. I didn't love him saying that about Lithuania.
He just can't say the right thing at the right time.
No, yeah, he can't. Yeah.
Like, it's impossible for him. And, I mean, obviously, I mean, the biggest news probably in the last week is the fact that he said that unless all three Ball brothers are signed by the Lakers, he does not want Lonzo to re-sign with the Lakers.
Yeah, he wants Lonzo to go wherever both LaMelo and LiAngelo get signed. That's, first off, that's him assuming that both of them get signed, and then assuming again they both get signed to the same team.
The fact that he thinks both of them are going to get signed. He thinks both of them are going to get signed.
It's just
even one of them.
Jello's not a fantastic player. If you watch him in lower level European leagues against kids that are younger than him, he's not. I might take Jeff with the bad ACL over him right now if they played one on one.
Really? Come on now. As someone who's had a knee injury.
Yeah, that's true. But, I was telling Jacob this. There is going to be some NBA team that's willing to sign both brothers just for the hype alone, right? You look at the Sacramento Kings. Can't you see Sacramento coming along? Why not sign them each to a two-way deal and pick up Lonzo in the...
Absolutely. As a small market team, you need to sell tickets. This boy, it's a business. That is a business move right there.
My question is...
John Elway can do it.
When does the... Don't get me started. When does the pushback come, right, from Lonzo? Eventually, Lonzo has to say, oh, okay, Dad, be quiet now. Yeah.
Isn't, like, LeVar is putting Lonzo in such a terrible situation. He either has to turn his back on the Lakers, who drafted him, or his own father. Yeah. His own father is putting him in a situation where either he has to turn his back on somebody.
And it's ironic, because LeVar arguably was a big reason he's on the Lakers now to begin with, right?
Yeah. I mean, I assume that's why the Lakers drafted Lonzo.
To please his dad.
Just to, like, you get the hype, come to a big market. Not that Lonzo's a bad player. Lonzo's a fantastic player. And, like, you're probably not going to lose much by drafting Lonzo Ball. But they drafted him for the media hype and the PR buzz, and it's working. So,
I don't know.
He's a human newsreel.
I would like, as of right now, Lonzo to stay with the Lakers. But I also don't want both LaMelo and LiAngelo on the team. So I'm hoping at some point... like you said, Jacob, he has to push back at some point, and I'm hoping it comes sometime soon when he decides to actually make decisions for himself to some extent. I'm sure he's making a decent amount, but a lot of times his dad is really kind of controlling his life to some extent. So
I actually, this is just me, but I kind of like seeing players that shouldn't really be playing in the NBA, but watching them try and fight their way through these these freaks of nature, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Jimmer Fredetti, it was just fun watching him try to play in the NBA, right? The same goes, there was an old British player named Pops Mitsubatsu in the mid-2000s. He was nowhere near an NBA caliber player, but somehow he ends up on the Bulls for a while. He ends up on Portland. He's battling at the four position against these monsters like Zach Randolph in his prime, and it was, you felt bad for him, but at the same time, it's kind of fun to see these not NBA caliber athletes try and fight their way through.
Yeah. You just like seeing him struggle.
Maybe. J. Cole once said there's beauty in the struggle.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my God.
All right. I think for now, that's all we got on LeVar this week. Obviously, we're hoping to be back next week with his current track record. I'm sure there will be plenty to talk about.
We could come back tomorrow, probably, and find something else to talk about.
But for now, we're going to move on to the Olympics. We got some, like, a lot of good news overall coming out of the Olympics. But we'll get to that after the break. So we'll just quickly go to break and we'll be back with the Olympics. All right, everybody, welcome back to UCCS Physical Activity Radio. Like I said, we're going to be talking about some Olympic news here. A lot of big news, including two 17-year-olds who won gold medals, Chloe Kim and Redmond Barron. That's just really good. On top of that, Michaela Schifrin won a gold medal, and this weekend, I believe, she has a chance to become the American record holder for most gold medals in the Olympics for alpine skiing specifically at 22 years old, which is incredible. Overall, the U.S., overall, the U.S. has 8 total medals, 5 gold, 1 silver, and 2 bronze medals. So what do you guys think about this? Have you been watching some of it?
I'm not a huge viewer of the Olympics, to be honest with you. I would like to, but I don't.
They're on at kind of random times.
It's hard for me. My nights are busy.
Mm-hmm.
I have homework. But the fact that 2 17-year-olds, that's like really disappointing, being 19 years old and seeing that. But it's kind of cool. Did you see the interview with Red after he won?
Yeah.
He was like, I lost my coat, and...
and then he said an explicitive
expletive that we cannot say on air.
Nope.
And then he's like, and then he just won a gold medal.
Yeah.
So.
And then Sean.
That's the most. Never mind. I was going to say that's the most Sean White way to ever do anything, right? But.
And then also Sean White kind of won a gold medal too. On the low key.
He did kind of win. I agree with
that. I'm sorry. I'm trying to find this video of him. I hope I saved it. It was from when he initially won a gold medal, and it was this interview he did with, I think it was CNN or some news station. And Sean White, yeah. This was when he was like 18 years old or so. And he was just talking about, he was like, yeah, man, like I won a gold medal. It's been great for me. Like the stewardesses.
It's been great for me.
The stewardesses have been like giving me drinks and stuff. And the reporter goes, drinks? You're only 19 years old. And then he goes, dude, I'm talking about Mountain Dew. Oh, Skylar found it for me. Okay, we're gonna play this for you guys because this is hilarious. Can I get the ox here real quick?
James, you better play Fire on the Ox, because that's what I'm here for. Hit us up with that Hotel California stuff.
Need your dongles. Oh, never mind.
No, you don't.
All right, here we go.
You're learning. That's fine.
Games, and they were just so excited to see me. They're like, you have the gold. And I mean, I had unlimited service after that. I was getting drinks and I was getting snacks, and I mean, I was taking photos in the back with all the stewardesses.
Fun. Wait a minute, drinks? You're 19 years old.
Yeah, I'm talking about Mountain Dews, baby.
That is pretty much the epitome of Sean White for you.
It feels more like the epitome of snowboard culture. Not to be.
Is it fair to call Sean White the greatest to ever do it now, though? At least in the sport.
Probably.
I
don't know a ton about snowboarding.
I don't know a ton either. And I just, since we've been young, it's only been Sean White in this, right? He's been the market.
In terms of U.S. snowboarding, the only person I know is Sean White.
Yeah.
And I guess Red now.
Yeah. Specifically.
Redmond is such a cool name. And then you say Red and I kind of lose it.
That's the 17-year-old, right?
Yeah.
He's from Silverthorne, too.
Yeah.
Local kid.
I saw a stat that all of the... all the athletes in the Olympics from the U.S. are from 6 states, and Colorado has 33 or something, then Utah, Minnesota, California, and I imagine Minnesota is hockey related.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating because Lindsey Vonn's from here, and just yay Colorado. It's something to stand up for.
Yeah, I mean, the Olympics are great. More stuff this weekend. I'm not entirely sure. The schedule is very confusing to me, I kind of wait for reports to come out. So
there's been a lot of wind delays too, right?
Yeah, it's been super weird.
I know Schifrin was supposed to ski at the beginning of the week, and then she didn't even end up skiing until Thursday, I think.
That's interesting you bring that up, because James and I were getting really invested in the biathlon over the weekend. And Let me tell you what's happening in the biathlon. Crazy stuff is happening.
Yeah, I mean, because it was kind of like, so people started going on, and then, like, as the race continued on and people started, it just got really, really windy, which is, like, to some extent, like, I don't want to say it's unfair, because it's the Olympics. You need
to be able to adapt.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, like, that, it, like, made it so much more difficult for the people who had to start later on. But, I mean, that, the biathlon is great. I don't know if you've watched it ever.
Scott, how much biathlon have you watched?
I don't even know.
They basically ski around, taking laps, and then they every lap they go down in either the prone position or standing up,
okay,
taking shots.
They shoot. Shooting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I believe the origin is a military thing.
Yeah.
And the wind would be so bad for some of them towards the end when they'd shoot that their bullets would be like inches off, which is like miles in their terms. But
yeah, because
it was fascinating.
They're shooting like little tiny pellets, so like the wind had an insane effect, which was even crazier.
Sports, man.
Yeah, I mean that was fun to watch for sure.
Well, skating is fun to watch too.
You have to live with a little of the random stuff that happens in sport, right?
Yeah.
Especially if it's an outdoor sport like that.
Yeah, I mean it's just conditions which every other sport has to deal with. So
yeah, I mean.
But I mean, I don't know.
I'm not going to say that they didn't, like, had an unfair event. They're Olympians. They should. I would hope that they are good enough to adapt to what is going on. But yeah, I mean, I just overall, the Olympics are fun to just in terms of a country pride situation. You're like, oh, cool, we won another gold. That's fun.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I love the aspect of the Olympics where, like, we get to see sports that we don't usually get to see, like curling. They made a huge deal about the, like, mixed doubles U.S. curling team.
Yeah. The,
and then they showed the record, and we were, like, 1-5.
Yeah.
I was like, what's going on? Why would you say that?
Yeah, they were bragging. They were like, look at us. We got a brother and sister. And I was like, they're 1-5. Maybe we shouldn't have brother and sister.
We don't need a whole profile on these people. They're not even, like, doing well. But hockey's interesting this year because no NHL, which to a lot of people, I mean, it would have been fun to see a bunch of NHL players in the Olympics, but it's fun seeing all the young kids play in the Olympics. Troy Terry from DU is playing for the U.S., and that's super fun. The U.S. finally won last night after blowing a 2-0 lead last time.
It shows the talents there. Maybe the discipline's just not, but that's kind of a fun place to be as a hockey program in the Olympics right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It's certainly, I mean, I like seeing, as someone who's watches more hockey than you guys, sorry. I look at the rosters and I see some names that are familiar. Definitely playing in the Olympics this year. Rasmus Dahlin is playing for Sweden, who's going to unanimously be the first overall pick this year. And he's super fascinating, just an incredible player at such a young age, which happens every year in hockey. He has the ability to take over a team similar to the way Connor McDavid has taken over the Oilers, which we don't need to get into the Oilers right now, but
why not?
Because they're a train wreck. And how does a team not with Connor McDavid not make the playoffs? That takes some real front office buffoonery to make that happen.
How close were they?
Were they? I mean, they made the playoffs last year.
No, to like making the playoffs this year.
Oh, they're not even.
They're not?
They're not even close. I mean, tough division. But, and they added a team to that division this year, who is frankly the best team in the league at Vegas.
big fan. Really big fan. I love what they're doing.
Yeah.
I've watched none of their games.
Who's your favorite player?
Marc-Andre Fleury. Ah,
man.
Yeah. Yeah. Take that.
I was expecting you not to be able to throw down the name. But it takes a whole other situation in the front office to be able to have the future of the NHL on your team and not even be close to a playoff spot. That is fascinating how they've been able to do that, honestly.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
I mean, but something else that's kind of interesting that happened recently was somewhat related to the Golden Knights is the fact that there's a possible Seattle expansion franchise for the NHL. Which is insane news. Seattle.
It's about time.
Yeah, they need something else, man. Jesus.
Yeah. Seahawks are looking okay. So
hey, man, the Sounders are good.
It's not even like Seattle doesn't have anything. It's just they're such a great fan base, and it doesn't matter the sport. It's just
they deserve another team.
That part of the Northwest is just they're always terrific in attendance.
Yeah, I see. They filed their application. They put the $10 billion down payment for an expansion team, and they're going to start. Their first year will be 2020, so a couple of years. And then immediately I think about expansion draft stuff. Like, who would Vegas lose?
Yeah.
2 years after, 3 years after being.
So you said it should take about 3 years for them to
2020
officially...
would be their first season.
2020? Okay.
And it raises the question of Supersonics.
Mm-hmm. Because they've been talking about it for a bit now. The NBA does want to expand in terms of teams, and they obviously Seattle was on their list. That's like one a great move by the NBA, just because everybody wants that. But also, again, fans in Seattle definitely deserve that after losing the Supersonics so long ago, or not so long ago, but
You're good. Let's not ignore the fact that Seattle has Chris Hansen as the guy who's trying to put a team there. Mm-hmm. He's one of the most deep-pocketed, most capable owners.
I think he's involved with this one as well.
That's what I hear, and he's played a huge role in getting the stadium put in place for the hockey team.
I think they're going to try and make it like the Pepsi Center.
A dual. So, and like Chris Hansen, just terrific person. He does great in the community of Seattle. There is no better place for a basketball team to go to right now. And what a historically significant team, the Supersonics, right? Gary Payton.
Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Durantula.
Detlef
Schrempf.
Yeah.
Sean Kemp.
He's Sean Kemp. we never even saw these guys play, but you still know about them. Yeah. That's a testament to that Seattle team, right? Mm-hmm.
It's super cool to see. They come back with their same uniforms.
Iconic jerseys, too, right?
What a cool name.
Could you
imagine? Supersonics.
Awesome.
That's much better than the Nuggets. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I think I'm excited for it. I just want it to happen because I think that it's like the fans deserve it. I just like the idea of expansion teams in general because I think that's just a lot of fun. The NFL doesn't really do any of it. I know they want to expand to England. I think
that's a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea. We're not going to get into it. I'll get angry. But
the NFL is – the business model they have right now is not terrific.
Oh, man. No. They're struggling.
The only thing worse is the XFL.
Let me say that. They're not even
–
they just started like
They do have a past.
They do. Remember the old XFL?
No one's arguing that the past XFL was the like properly run business.
Here's the thing about that old XFL, though. And if you look at their old advertising, they would literally advertise one of their best players in the league getting walloped. those old XFL commercial. And like they would play up the like Wild West injury prone. We're getting these unknown characters. And now this modern XFL is the polar opposite. You know what I mean? If you have a criminal record, you can't play. All these restrictions, all these different things. It's like, it's trying to be the NFL that appeals to the demographic of NFL fans that are upset right now.
Yeah.
Versus like, imagine a Wild West style XFL where you get the Johnny Manziels of the world and you
That'd
get
so much more
big
fun.
Money thrown at Tim Tebow.
Yeah, Tim Tebow.
Oh, that would be terrific for
those
viewership.
Those are two polar opposite players.
I know, and imagine getting them both in the game.
You could run a two quarterback set with Tim Tebow and Johnny Manziel.
That would be even better. Imagine, I mean...
The media hype around a team with Tim Tebow and Johnny Manziel.
It'd be like...
Throwing Jamarcus Russell or something, like...
I feel like
you should be thinking Jamarcus Russell's in right now.
Terrible.
Russell, former Raiders quarterback, right?
Yeah.
The Raiders had another. The Raiders had another kid. That was Terrell Pryor. You remember him?
I do remember Terrell Pryor.
And another super talented kid as well, but
terrible season on the Redskins this year.
Yeah, terrible. I drafted him high. I was high on him in fantasy.
There was
a couple good weeks.
Jason Campbell.
Jason Campbell was good for years. He was really good.
Is it? Between Pryor, Jason Campbell, and Jamarcus Russell, doesn't it feel like the Redskins and the Raiders just kind of constantly trade quarterbacks that are all relatively the same player?
A little bit, you know.
I don't know. And they're not trading Derek Carr. They could say Kirk Cousins.
I don't mean the modern day rendition of either team, but I guess in the past it felt like we had this constant.
Yeah, who was that? Aaron Brooks. Remember Aaron Brooks?
I do. just a bunch of scrambling quarterbacks that were not very fast. And it felt like they just constantly went in between Oakland and Washington.
I don't know. Washington has been kind of a mess for the last 10 years anyway.
More than that, really.
Since Clinton Portis left, really.
Clinton Portis. And then they had that big Albert Haynesworth contract that didn't quite work out for him.
That's somebody who else could play in the XFL. Albert Haynesworth. That'd be fun. See if he can fail another physical or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I remember I seen a special during the whole Albert Haynesworth thing, and they were talking about the physicals, like the actual tests you have to take to be in the NFL. It's not that hard, apparently, and Albert Haynesworth still failed it. Obviously, it's more difficult. You probably couldn't do it, but compared to the physical attributes that players possess right now, it's not really that hard.
It's amazing he was as good as he was for a time.
Where'd he go? Auburn?
Auburn. Yeah. Well, those first few years in the league were...
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. He's a big man.
He was no Julius Peppers, but...
You always try and throw down these names that... Well, one's a defensive tackle and one's a defensive end, so let's start there.
Yeah, you're right.
Also, Julius Peppers still plays.
At a very
high
level.
On the Panthers, actually?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Which is fun to see, right?
Yeah, that's nice. Who's returning home in the NFL that's not Julius Peppers? That's kind of cool. What
position?
I don't know. We may just have to skip over this.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Because I'm not going to be able to. I'd say it's more comparable to like a Nick Fairley situation. Probably because they both went to Auburn and both played defensive tackle. or Haloti Ngata. Is that a name you're familiar with? Come on, Skyler. You threw down a Charlie Batch reference the other day, and Haloti Ngata is just nothing.
No. I'll give you a poor
my God. You know what? Actually, I threw down a Lofa Tutupu reference the other day.
I like that one. That
and
nice
Skyler
one.
Was like, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Who was the old Redskins linebacker? Fletcher.
London Fletcher.
London Fletcher. He was a player.
London is such a cool first name. You know what I was thinking last night at Black Panther? Chadwick is a sweet first name.
It is.
That is an awesome first name.
The Black Panther, man, what a culturally significant movie.
Are we going to get into the Black Panther right now? We can. I'm fine with it.
I'm not. I want to see it. I would rather no spoilers, please.
You're right, and we can't spoil those listening as well, but
yeah,
all our listeners. If you haven't seen the Black Panther yet, take the time of day, because...
It was good. As somebody who's not a huge Marvel and... overall superhero movie guy. Objectively, I thought it was pretty good. When Skyler texted me at 1 a.m. last night.
As someone who is the fan, take the time of day, because I have never seen a superhero movie like this before.
It is. It seemed different. And different, culturally, and then just, generally speaking, different.
It was authentic, too. It wasn't trying to be something that it didn't really have the authority to be.
I don't know. It was good.
Yeah, agreed.
Anyway, off topic there.
Into some NFL news here. So Johnny Manziel was recently... He's been signed to a spring league. This obviously spring. I was going to say... Never mind. It's a spring.
Yeah.
It's like a two teams, and they're going to train for, I believe it's 2 months or so?
Yeah, something like that.
It's about a month or two. And then at the end, they're both going to play in a game. Actually, I think there's four teams.
Yeah,
and then there's either way.
I know very little about this spring league.
This report is mainly about Johnny Manziel trying to make a NFL comeback. Definitely brings some notoriety to the spring league. But also, he's been trying to come back for a while now. He was under the radar for a bit because he kind of... I mean, I don't know. I don't follow him on Instagram, and I unfollowed him on Snapchat. But
I follow him on all social media.
You do.
If listeners who have listened to us previously, you may or may not be able to figure out. I also love Johnny Manziel. Similar as I love Baker Mayfield and LeVar Ball. So you're seeing a trend.
Yeah. He's been working hard. He was working out in San Diego, and he's been trying to get back for a bit now.
He's putting in work. Generally speaking, I think he's got his life back on track.
Yeah, I'd say so.
He's in the gym again. He's playing in the spring league.
Can I ask you guys a question?
No.
Okay.
Yes.
Go for it. Yeah.
So there was the whole bipolar disorder diagnosis, right?
Mm-hmm.
What
a preposterous news.
I'm not saying that wasn't true or that he doesn't have it, but it seemed like it was a very convenient timing for a very troubled young man.
Yeah, trying to come back, and then he gets signed to this spring league, and then is the time that he says.
And I feel like that's almost it's almost disrespectful to the people that really are suffering from mental illness and things of that sort. It shouldn't be an excuse for being a poor decision maker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Johnny Manziel in this scenario, maybe he actually is going through what he's going through, but it seems like a very convenient marketing strategy for his own personal character. And I don't love that.
I mean, it's kind of a Johnny Manziel move.
Johnny Manziel.
In a way, doing this proves he... What if he isn't any different, right?
Yeah.
Is he still the same person? I don't know.
We'll have to find out in the NFL Spring League.
Personality traits aside, and all the off the field stuff you may or may not get at this point, is he straight up a good enough football player to do that? My question.
Good question.
Let's say we have Johnny Manziel in his purest form. He's no issues. He really is the person he's trying to say he is right now. Is he good enough?
When he was in the NFL, absolutely not. No, he should have spent more time in college. He got overhyped by the media. I can't blame him for taking the opportunity, because why would you not take the opportunity to be drafted first overall? Why would you not? But that being said, at the time, I don't think he did. I don't know. Even though Johnny Manziel is a close friend of the show, I really haven't been speaking with him lately, so I don't know what kind of work he's putting in terms of getting into a NFL shape, so to speak. But if he really is doing everything he's saying he's doing, he very well could be in NFL form, especially in the current NFL state, where not only do you want your quarterback to be able to throw.
Quarterback here, so.
Well, yeah, and on top of that, he can run, too.
Yeah.
For sure. So, I mean, that was one of his best traits when he was in the NFL. And so if he still has that, and if he's improved his throwing and just in general, as like an overall strength, accuracy and everything, I think he could very well be, at the very least, a backup quarterback, maybe transition into a starting quarterback role.
He's at least got the capability of being put in special packages for NFL teams. I would use the same argument for why you would draft Lamar Jackson. But I'm going to go back to what I said at the beginning of the show. I'm going to use some keywords that I would say I would not want to use, but I'm going to be hypocritical here. He's a competitor.
Yes.
You got to give him that. He's coming back after rehab. It's got to be some competitive fire in him.
Yeah.
He's scrappy. All words I said we shouldn't use when describing a quarterback or any player, really. But those are the traits that, like, as a player of his size and his, like, ability, you need to have. And those are the traits that are going to carry you into the NFL if you're Johnny Manziel. And he has his own clothing brand now, and he's this whole comeback thing. Honestly, I'd buy a comeback season sweatshirt if I could.
The thing that concerns me is, like, I watched the kid when he got some playing time with the Browns a couple years back.
Yeah.
He could not make reads. He would hide the ball, read one, and then just scramble, right?
Yeah.
And I think every time he scrambled, he was hoping for a defensive collapse so he could just hit a receiver short wherever the cornerback left, right?
It was really kind of like he had no intention. He didn't really read anything. He had it planned out in his mind before he even snapped the ball what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would snap the ball and go for it, and then it wouldn't work because he wasn't making the right read at all.
My dad once said it perfectly. He's playing a college man's game in the NFL. That's what he was doing.
Seeing getting using that first read and then scrambling is such a college move.
Yeah,
and like, you said that that's why he was successful in college, really.
Yeah. And he's quick. He can move, but he's not
athletic. You have to be better mentally than you are physically in the NFL.
Definitely. And you have to quarterbacks that can't make their reads quickly, they don't succeed no matter what their physical attributes are. And you even see the Rams kid is finally starting to get to the point where he can snap through those reads. But even he struggled with it for a while.
I mean, Goff definitely struggled this first year.
And like, there's not a more talented quarterback.
So did Carson Wentz. So,
mm-hmm. Well,
saying these things about Johnny Manziel raises the same questions as Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield is better than Johnny Manziel overall. Mm-hmm. Just he's had a different upbringing and general career in college than Johnny Manziel. But if you objectively look at Johnny Manziel and Baker Mayfield, if you wrote down a list of their accomplishments on paper, you would not be like, you know what? We should take him in the first round. Because you look at Baker Mayfield, you're like, what? He won the Big 12 conference. Probably 2 years. So he won the Big 12 twice. In a traditionally not great defensive conference.
Mm-hmm.
He played probably one real good defense in Georgia this year, and he has off-field problems, drinking, grabbing his junk on the field, telling Kansas people to watch basketball instead.
That immature. But
yeah, if you just look at it objectively, you're probably not thinking that you're going to draft either of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that attitude. There's just something about it that drives you towards them. And it's just something competitive about them.
And I would say maybe if one little thing goes different for Johnny Manziel, whether it's from a quarterback development coach or a different setting.
Yeah, what if he doesn't get drafted by the Browns?
Different receivers. Maybe everything goes right and we're looking at a Drew Brees type player that can move his feet now, right?
Yeah.
So it's really tough to say, man, is it the player archetype or is it the team? And I'm excited to see Baker Mayfield, assuming he doesn't go to the Browns. What a Cleveland move that would be.
Oh, God. That would just be class. They cannot make that mistake 2 times in a row. Right?
I'm excited to see Baker Mayfield next season because we're going to learn about the archetype. Can that type of quarterback succeed in the NFL? And I'm excited to find out because I don't think we have a very definitive answer to that.
Even, can that type of attitude thrive in the NFL?
Definitely.
And you'd say even the closest thing at the quarterback position to that kind of attitude is Cam Newton, and he has significantly toned it down since he's been in the
NFL.
He's
also much bigger.
He's no argument. He's a much better football player than both of them, but it's the similar attitude that drives me towards that comparison.
And coming out of college, Cam didn't really have that attitude issue. That was something that he developed.
He had the same competitive fire on the field, but he was certain, he had other things happen off the field in college that... that were just much different problems overall off the field, but
Jameis Winston maybe
that could be a good comparison.
Probably,
yeah. With
I still think Jameis is better
than Marcus Mariota, or than Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield.
Okay,
I like Mariota a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I like him too.
Mariota's got a good head on his shoulders.
He's gonna be. Well, no, I feel like he's one of those quarterbacks that as soon as he gets a really reliable receiver, you're just going to see an explosion.
You're telling me Eric Decker isn't...
I mean, yeah.
Titans got a draft receiver in this draft.
Right? It's a deep class.
The Bama kid, you think...
Calvin Ridley?
Think they're high?
I don't even think Ridley's going to be the first receiver taken.
Really?
I think Cortland Sutton at SMU is going to be taken.
I think...
And it's so deep. You can go Alan Lazard. We've talked about Alan Lazard
before. We have.
I love Alan Lazard.
Do you like Ridley to the Titans, though? Does that make sense to you? Really? I
don't know. Somebody who's going to compliment Delanie Walker. So that would mean somebody, you'd like to say a deep threat to open up space in the middle for Delanie Walker.
You want size, too, a little bit, right?
Which, then that would be Alan Lazard.
That's true. I don't know.
Cortland Sutton is really good, and I think he's probably going to be the first receiver taken in the draft out of SMU. And, I mean, I don't know where else the Titans go. Their running back situation's figured out. Their quarterback situation's figured out. Their defense was pretty good this year.
I mean...
What pick are the Titans? by the way.
They're probably mid-pack.
I mean, yeah, they made the playoffs, so they got to be.
Can I blindly guess, like, a 22?
That sounds probably yeah, that's right. That's like, well, honestly, that's probably
so good. So they drafted Corey Davis last year, who is he's 6 foot two. I mean, let me see how tall Cortland Sutton is. I feel like Cortland Sutton could be.
I would say 6'1", 6'2". 25 Titans. I mean, they're probably going to go. Why? With the NFL.com has the Titans' top needs, tight end.
Delanie Walker isn't enough. Nope.
That seems
Jacob.
Like...
I won't hear it. I will not hear it. Delanie Walker's terrible. He's the worst player in the NFL.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, it makes absolutely no sense.
It says, finding another combination tight end to eventually take over for Delanie Walker should be on their radar.
I mean,
I guess that's fine, but that's not necessary.
Now what they need to focus on.
They're going
to
need, they need to go edge rusher and receiver.
Tight end's never, it's not a position you draft high either, right? It's,
no.
Not really. It's a developmental position. Because you see kids taken, they never.
O.J. Howard was taken first, the first tight end, the first round.
He was, by the Bucks.
And...
Well, I'm like, look at, like, you have Julius Thomas, right?
Yeah.
You have Virgil Green.
Those Antonio dudes, Gates was undrafted.
Yeah, they were college basketball players, and they Jimmy were developed Graham. Into good tight ends. So I don't even know why you would go high with a tight end.
I wouldn't. Nobody would, right?
you would hope.
But you're thinking, Titans are taking receiver at some point in the draft to complement.
Cortland Sutton's 6'4".
That's
feel
a big man.
He's 6'4 and 216. I believe...
Wow.
I believe, if I just read that correctly, Corey Davis is 6'2 and 250.
I think they're different receivers.
Well, they definitely are. Yeah. But that could be a good thing. And in terms of both complimenting Delanie Walker as well as, he's 205. That makes a lot more sense.
Do they trade up to take Cortland Sutton? I mean, Cortland Sutton would be taking top 15 probably.
Top 10, maybe.
Yeah.
You always see a receiver reach.
Player,
yeah.
Man. I had Laquan Treadwell was, and he's been terrible for the Vikings, so... Mega Quan. You don't, I guess even with the deep draft class, you don't even have to trade up. You probably trade up to take offensive line, if anything, and probably don't even need to do that.
Not the Titans, at least.
I don't think the Titans are trading up anymore.
Nope. They got Marcus Mariota, that was it. They were okay with that.
They worked out well, so I guess it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, good for the Titans. Titans outlook's looking up.
Yeah. I mean, overall, NFL draft's going to be really interesting. In the coming weeks here, we'll actually be doing a full mock draft. Each of us will be going through. We'll spend the entire show on that. We'll have more details for you next week. But as for this week, that is it for us. Thank you guys for tuning in.
At UCCSPA Radio.
Follow us at UCCSPA Radio on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find us at soundcloud.com/UCCSPA Radio 1. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week.